Namaste Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Vasudevaya.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 87, the prayers of the personified Vedas, text number
Janna Sutatma Dharadhana Dhamma Darashu Ratais
Janna Sutatma Dharadhana
Twaye Sati Kim Rinam Srayata Atmane Sarvarase
Twaye Sati Kim Rinam Srayata
Iti Sad Ajanatam Mitu nato rataye charatam sukayati kon viha sva vihate sva nirasta bhage
sukayati kon
okay, we can do the word for word.
Svajana.
Svajana.
With servants.
With servants.
Sutta.
Sutta.
Children.
Children.
Atma.
Atma.
Body.
Body.
Dara.
Dara.
Wife.
Wife.
Dhana.
Dhana.
Money.
Money.
Dharma.
Dharma.
Home.
Home.
Dhara.
Dhara.
Land.
Land.
Asu.
Asu.
Vitality.
Vitality.
Ratai,
Ratai
and vehicles.
And vehicles.
Twai.
Twai.
When you.
When you.
Sati.
Sati.
Have become.
Have become.
Kim.
Kim.
What use.
What use.
Nrinam.
Nrinam.
For human beings.
For human beings.
Shayataha.
Shayataha.
Who are taking shelter.
Who are taking shelter.
Atmani.
Atmani.
Their very self.
Saravarase,
the embodiment of all pleasures.
Iti,
thus. Sat,
the truth.
Ajanatam, for those who fail to appreciate. Mitunataha,
from
sexual combinations. Rataye,
for sensual indulgence.
Jaratam,
carrying on.
Sukhayati,
gives happiness.
Kaha,
what?
Nu,
at all.
Iha, in this world.
Sva,
by its very nature.
Vihate,
which is subject to destruction.
Sva,
by its very nature. Nirasta,
which is devoid.
Bhage,
of any essence.
To those persons who take shelter of you, you reveal yourself as the super soul, the embodiment of all transcendental pleasure. What further use have such devotees for their servants, children or bodies, their wives, money or houses, their land, good health or conveyances? And for those who fail to appreciate the truth about you and go on pursuing the pleasures of sex, what could there be in this entire world, a place inherently doomed to destruction and devoid of significance that could give them real happiness. A cheery kind of a verse. Purport. Devotional service to Lord Vishnu is considered pure when one's soul desires to please the Lord. Situated in that perfect consciousness, a Vaishnava has no further interest in worldly gains and is thus excused from any obligation to perform ritual sacrifices and follow austere practices of yoga, as the Mundaka Upanishad 1.2.12 states. Pariksha lokan kama chitan brahmano nivedam ayan nash jagritaha kritena. When a Brahmana recognizes, got a bit of reverb on the sound system, have we? Sorry. When a Brahmana recognizes that elevation of the heavenly planets is merely another accumulation of karma, he becomes renounced and is no longer corrupted by his actions. The Brihad Aranyaka 449 and Katar 614 Upanishads confirm Yada Sarve Pramuchante Kama Yesya Vidi Sritaha Hatamarjo Mito Bhavati Atra Brahma Samashnute. When a person completely gives up all the sinful desires he is harbouring in his heart, he exchanges mortality for eternal spiritual life and attains real pleasure in the absolute truth. And the Gopal Tapani Upanishad, Purva 15, concludes Bhaktirasya Bhajanam Tad Ihamu Tropadi Nairasyena Mushmin Manaha Kalpanam Etad Eva Naishkaramyam. Devotional service is the process of worshipping the Supreme Lord. It consists of fixing one's mind upon Him by becoming disinterested in all material designations, both in this life and the next. This indeed is true renunciation. The items the Shrutis mention here are all measures of worldly success. Svajanaha, servants. Atma, a beautiful body. Sutaha, children to be proud of. Daraha, an attractive and competent spouse. Dhanam, financial assets. Dham, a prestigious residence. Dhara, holdings of land. Ashavaha, health and strength. And Rataha, cars and other vehicles that display one's status. But one who has begun to experience the ecstasy of devotional service loses all attraction for these things, since he finds real satisfaction in the Supreme Lord, the reservoir of all pleasure, whom enjoys by sharing his own pleasures with his servitors. We are each free to choose the course of our life. We can either dedicate our body, mind, words, talents and wealth to the glory of God, or else we can ignore him and struggle instead for our personal happiness. The second path leads to a life of slavery to sex and ambition, in which the soul never feels real satisfaction but instead suffers continually. Vaishnavas are distressed to see materialists suffering in this way, and so they always strive to enlighten them. Srila Sridharaswami prays, Bhajato hi bhavansakshat paramananda chiddhanaha atmaiva kim atakrityam tuchadhara satadibhi. For those who worship you, you become their very self, their spiritual treasure of topmost bliss. What further use have they for mundane wives, children, and so forth? Jnatimirandasya gananjana salakaya chakshurunmilitam jena tasmai sri gurave namaha sri chaitanya mano vishtam stapitam jena bhutale
Svayam rupa kada mahiyam dadati svapadantikam mukam karoti vachalam pangum langhayate girim yat kripa tamaham bande Sri Guru Dinatarinam.
So, what's the problem with the material world? Regardless of how influential, how powerful, how enthusiastic one may become about material life, whether in the heavenly planets, in the middle planets, in the lower species of life, it's all temporary. So everything that we work for is basically doomed. It's asat. It's not permanent. It's temporary. And as Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita, adyanta vanta kuntaya na teshu ramate buddha. One who's buddha or intelligent doesn't seek pleasure. Na teshu ramate buddha. One who's intelligent doesn't seek pleasure in temporary things. In fact, we were reading last night. Intelligence means the ability to be able to see things with discrimination. To be able to see the difference between one thing and another. And knowledge means to understand what's matter and what is spirit. Right? And this section of the Bhagavatam, especially this verse, gives us a very clear understanding of the frailties or the weaknesses of a material existence. When one becomes trapped or enamored by the offerings of the material creation, then one is, practically speaking, doomed. You know, you may be successful. You may have lots of money. You may have a nice motor car, a big house, children, partner, all of these things. But they will all be taken away. In due course of time, they will be taken away. And they'll be the cause, you know, they may be the cause, a stimulus for happiness. But ultimately, they'll be the cause of great distress. This is the message, basically, from this verse. And if we become enamored by such things, then we are doomed to face death and all the other problems that come as a result of that. Janma mrityu jara vyadhi. After death comes rebirth. As a result of the desires that we have. And as a reward for our past karmas, we get the next birth. And not necessarily according to what we desire, because, you know, you can desire as much as you like, but if you don't deserve, you know, right? You can be an ant and want to jump the Rialto building, for example. You know, and there are those who have the philosophy that so long as you desire it, and if you desire it enough, then it will happen. But obviously, that's not true. So, the material energy has a potency, though. It's very powerful. It's like Prabhupada gives the example of a fire or a light that attracts a bug. You know, the bug is attracted to the fire, but it flies towards the fire and then into the fire, burnt up. But the light is attractive. You see it at night for the bugs. You know, where there's a light, then they always fly around it. They're captivated by it. So the material energy has this glitter or this glow, this attractiveness that those with material desires and aspirations, they're actually we're caught, actually, and it's part of the system. So long as we have a desire to want to enjoy separately from Krishna, then we will always have this problem of being attracted to material things. It's just the way the system works. But of course, as pointed out here, so long as we're attracted to the material energy, then we have to undergo the sufferings of material existence. What we call happiness is simply the alleviation of distress. But it is very temporary. Even, and Krishna points it out in the Bhagavad Gita, even if we're attracted to living in the heavenly planets, living on the planets of the demigods who live for hundreds of thousands of years, even their position, even though it's very attractive, they're enjoying immensely with great facility, company, and so forth, still it comes to an end. So Krishna mentions one shouldn't be attracted to the flowery words of the Vedas promising all sorts of heavenly enjoyments, because even those heavenly enjoyments are limited and temporary. And especially when our desire is to enjoy unlimited happiness. The desire of the living entity is to enjoy unlimitedly. That's why the Vedas explain, anandamaya abhyasa, we're all pleasure-seeking, actually. Everything that we do is motivated by a desire, basically, to enjoy. It's just that we do it in the wrong way. And of course, that comes from Krishna, because Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. And being part and parcel of him, then we also have that inclination to enjoy. It's just that we have chosen to enjoy separately from Krishna. And then as a result, that means we have to suffer. In the middle of the suffering, we get some relief, and we call that happiness. That's a very poor quality of happiness. But it's very interesting. If we look at the nature of the very elevated devotees, when somebody becomes attracted to Krishna and devotional service, then their degree of attraction for things material slackens. When material life becomes, and of course this worries people sometimes, this concerns people, you know, when they see somebody making spiritual advancement and losing their taste or interest in material life, then people get worried. Oh, no, this is not very good. You know, sometimes people would complain to Prabhupada or make the comment, you know, what if everybody became a devotee, then the material world would be empty. There wouldn't be anybody there. Of course, that's not a problem. Although they might feel lonely because they got left behind. But, you know, we were discussing yesterday, I was reading yesterday about Rupa and Snat and Goswami. What Raghunath Das is a very good example of the, you know, the Goswamis, the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, the principal associates of Lord Chaitanya, his key disciples, they were on the whole very wealthy and influential men in their own right. Rupa and Sanatan Goswami were sort of like the equivalent of the premier and the treasurer of the state. They were the main assistants of the Nawab, Hussein Shah, who was a Muslim. In fact, they were so intimately connected with the Nawab that they had, even though they were born in a Saraswat Brahmana family, a very elevated Brahminical family, they had taken on, but basically they were almost outcast from the Brahminical community, and so they even had Muslim names, and they were very wealthy, very influential. One might wonder why they did that, but one of the reasons why they did that was because they used their position to protect the Brahminical community. They actually were highly respected by the Nawab and his court and the Muslim rulers. And with that power and influence, they were actually able to then protect the Brahmin community of Bengal. But it's interesting to see, and also Raghunath Das's father and brother, their family name was Majumdar, which is a Bengali name, even to this day. And they were Govardhan and, what was his, I can't remember the other, his brother's name. Anyway, they were incredibly wealthy, very, very wealthy men. And Raghunath Das would try to run away to go to be with Lord Chaitanya and the devotees. And this would upset his father and his brother. And so they send out a party of men and capture him and bring him back to the family. And Raghunath Das, it's interesting to note that Raghunath Das was in his childhood, in his early childhood, he was given the opportunity to associate with Haridas Thakur, who was a friend of Acharya. I can't remember what his first name is. But he was a family priest. Was it Bhagavan Acharya? Or I can't remember. But anyway, the family priest of the Majumdars was a friend of Haridas Thakur. And Haridas Thakur used to come and visit and spend time with the family priest. Of course, he wasn't just a family priest, but he was a devotee, obviously. So Raghunath Das used to hear the discussions of Krishna consciousness between these two devotees, senior devotees. And he became very attracted to devotional service as a result of that. And he had heard about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the devotees. So his desire from a very young age was to be with the devotees. And but his family, his father had arranged for him to get married. He had a very attractive wife, he had a very beautiful house, servants, influence, money, he had all of these things. But all he wanted to do was leave home and go and be with Mahaprabhu. And eventually this just frustrated his father, because his father said to his brother, you know, we've given him all of the things that would ordinarily entrap a man. All of the things that would keep a person satisfied and happy at home. And we can't bind him, even if we chain him. And you know, you don't want to chain your son to his house, because it defeats the purpose. But even if we were to chain him, still his mind would go to be with the devotees. We also see that in the case of Sanatan and Rupa Goswami. You know, they very wealthy, very influential, yet they easily renounced those positions to be with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Similar situation. Raghunath Das was much younger than them. Much younger. But Rupa and Sanatan, they were the first to basically give up their material situation and go to Vrindavan under the order of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They were given two tasks. First task was to uncover and establish all of the tirthas, all of the sacred sites of Krishna's pastimes, which over a period of 5,000 years, those locations, many of them had become lost. and also to study the Vedas and to write literature supporting the conclusions that Mahaprabhu taught in his Shikshastika. Basically, the Shikshastika describes all of the basic philosophical conclusions of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, Lord Chaitanya wanted Rupa and Sanatan to study the Vedic literature and then compile teachings that supported the practice of devotional service as we know it today. And of course, Srila Prabhupada translated the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Rupa Goswami's book, into the Nectar of Devotion. And basically, the Nectar of Devotion is like, Prabhupada says, a law book for ISKCON. Because it basically teaches the process of devotional service. So, from being in a very worldly situation, in a very influential position, very powerful position, the Goswamis went to Vrindavan and lived as mendicants, wearing only loincloth and some cloth, two pieces of cloth. They'd sleep under a different tree every night. And, Govardhan, they lived at Govardhan. And Govardhan actually has, when you think about it, living under a different tree every night and just wearing two pieces of cloth and a loincloth. Govardhan has the Guinness Book of Records for being the hottest place on the planet. Right? It also is the coldest place too. It's not the coldest place, but it gets very cold in winter. Right? But the Goswamis lived this very frugal, meagre existence. It said that they were so absorbed in their chanting and their study and even teaching and writing books that they would sleep only 1.5 to 2 hours in a night. Raghunath Das was known for he was so austere that he was at the point where Raghunath Das was given a Govardhan Shila by Mahaprabhu, and he used to worship that Shila. That was his prime activity, was this worship of the deity. But he was so absorbed in his internal meditation that he wouldn't eat. Practically speaking, every couple of days he would just have some drops of buttermilk, and that's all he would take. In fact, Prabhupada mentions that the devotees would question, how are Rupa and Sanatan keeping their bodies alive? This would be their question. Because they would sleep so little and eat so little. Now, of course, that's not to be imitated. You know, just the fact that you don't eat is not a symptom of spiritual advancement, necessarily. It could be that you're just starving yourself. Right? There's a difference between starving yourself and being renounced. So it's not actually a measure of advancement, necessarily. What it is a measure of their absorption in devotional service, absorption in the bhakti ras. So, devotional service is so absorbing for the devotees that they get pleasure out of it. Just like we get pleasure out of serving Krishna. Even in the beginning stages of devotional service, we get pleasure out of chanting Hare Krishna. We get pleasure out of rendering service to the deities. We get pleasure out of rendering service to the devotees. It's a natural pleasure. But the Goswamis, of course, and that pleasure, when it's deepened, especially when a person becomes free from attraction to, birth, wealth, wife, family, house, car, that attraction for Krishna deepens and deepens and deepens, and it becomes love of prema, love for Krishna, love of Godhead, then one is able to easily give up these things. Not so much that they give them up, it's that they become more deeply attracted and absorbed in their devotional service. This is real renunciation, actually. Renunciation means being absorbed in things so deeply, absorbed in devotional service so deeply, that the other things just don't come into the equation. Of course, initially in devotional service, we have some rules and regulations. We have to chant 16 rounds. We're encouraged no meat eating, no gambling, no intoxication, no illicit sex. So we have some basic prohibitions. But these higher level, this higher level of renunciation comes about as a result of deep love for Krishna. It's not so, you know, it's not just some, you know, rule and regulation. It comes about spontaneously. These things arise in the heart of a devotee. But it comes from purity, actually. It's mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, Savai Pum Samparo Dhamo Yato Bhakti Ranoksaje Hoitaki Apatiyata Yayatma Suprasiddhati. That the highest achievement is this love for Krishna. That's the highest achievement. But it has to be ahoitaki apatihata. It has to be undeviated and it has to be unmotivated. That's pure devotional service. Unfortunately, what we find is we're still attracted to money, friendship, mundane friendship, influence, and all of these things listed here. And they're not disallowed, actually. Rupa Goswami mentions that real renunciation means to use these things in Krishna's service. We may still have an attraction for them. Not may, we do. But the process of devotional service is so powerful and so complete that we don't have to give these things up, but rather we convert our attachment to these things to engaging them in practical service to Krishna. You know, the bhakti yogis, if you like, bhakti yoga is the only process that allows, for example, marriage in its system. Otherwise, if you're a Jnani or a Ashtanga yogi, then you have to be strict celibate, strict brahmachari. But the bhakti yoga system is so flexible, if you like, and incorporates all of the ashrams, all of the varnas, so that whatever we are or whatever position we happen to be in, if we simply add Krishna to the equation, then gradually we can start making progress to this very advanced stage. We were reading yesterday in the Bhagavad Gita that one should not be too attached to things. Right? One shouldn't be too attached. But by the same token, one shouldn't be too detached. This can cause problems too. Especially, you know, if you're a family man or woman. You have a responsibility. You have to look after your family. Otherwise, you say, oh yes, you know, we should be renounced. The family is just a temporary distraction. And then we become falsely renounced and neglect our responsibilities. So, Prabhupada mentions in the purport in the 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, 10:4-5. He mentions, we shouldn't be too attached, but we shouldn't also be too detached. Right? We should be responsible, in other words. And depending on what ashram or what varna, what occupation we happen to be in, we should perform our duties in such a way so that we connect them with Krishna consciousness, with Krishna. And Prabhupada, what Prabhupada would call dovetail. We dovetail our propensities. Because one might become discouraged, thinking, oh, you know, I'm supposed to be an advanced devotee, but I'm still attached to material things. What shall I do? And one can become frustrated by one's inability to achieve the highest level of devotional service straight away. Right? But one has to apply oneself to the process from the point at which one is situated, and then gradually work towards a level of attachment to Krishna whereby one can easily renounce or practically renounce. Raghunath Das was actually told by Lord Chaitanya, but I think it was Lord Nityananda actually, you'll get the... He went to the gathering of devotees, which eventually is now celebrated as the Panihata Chida Doi Utsav. My Bengali is not that good. But anyway, that was where Raghunath Das, Lord Nityananda and the devotees were having a mela, they're having a gathering on the bank of the Ganga. And Raghunath Das wanted to feed all of the devotees. And so it was in summertime. And so he then provided all of the flat rice, is it called kheer? Chira, that's right, chira. Chira means the flat rice and doi means the yogurt. So he provided all of the chira and all of the yogurt for the devotees. And then Lord Nityananda told Raghunath Das, look, stop running away from home and creating a disturbance. Now is not the time to renounce everything, but in due course of time, you'll get the mercy of Mahaprabhu. Which is a good lesson for all of us. You know, we may want to be elevated or advanced and renounced, but you know, most of us still have family responsibilities. So you know, we have to wait. We have to wait for the indication of Krishna. And at this point, we have to then perform our duty. And you know, the Bhagavad Gita emphasizes performing duty. Because actually that duty is purifying for us. You know, we may think, oh, you know, family life is tedious, work is boring, I want to go and live in the temple, in the ashram. But we may think like that occasionally. But you know, just because life is tough and it's hard work doesn't mean that we should shirk our duties. Because actually that, following that duty is actually part of the purification of that particular vana and ashram. Then gradually, as we strengthen our practice of devotional service from wherever we happen to be, and gradually that the realization and the understanding, the development of renunciation will naturally manifest in the heart. It naturally manifests. And, you know, okay, not too attached, but also not too detached. Too much detachment usually leads to impersonalism and neglecting the needs even of ourselves. Right? We become so rigidly attached to being renounced that we neglect our own needs. What to speak of the needs of others? Right? It's the kind of thing that sometimes happens in the ashram. You know, somebody gets sick, but the others are, you're not the body, Prabhu. You're just in Maya. And then not looked after. This can happen. You know, due to this sort of false sense of renunciation, we can then neglect ourselves and neglect others. So Raghunath Das was encouraged by Nityananda, look, go home and act normally. Be normal. And then in due course of time you'll get an opportunity to leave things at an appropriate time. And then, so that's what he did. He went home and behaved normally. And his family then didn't have to guard him 24 hours a day to make sure that he would run off or not. I don't think we have that problem. I don't think anybody is, you know, running away from their responsibilities. But we should understand that actually the responsibilities, especially of family life, they're actually there for our purification. Eventually Raghunath Das got the opportunity to leave home. He actually ran away, as it turns out. It's interesting to note that the same kind of problems that we experience now were experienced then. The pujari didn't turn up to do Mangal Aarti. So Raghunath Das had to run off to go and find the pujari, but then he thought, okay, now's my chance. He left home sometime later. On the plea of going to find the pujari to do the Mangal Aarti. So we want to be elevated in Krishna consciousness, but so long as we have attractions for material things, then we can't renounce them artificially, because the attraction will remain. And to become detached from material things requires a deep absorption in Krishna consciousness and really developing our love for Krishna. And so therefore, it's recommended that we follow the regulated principles of devotional service, rather than falsely deny our attachments, we utilize those things in devotional service, so that gradually we become purified. So therefore, you know, marriage and job and so forth, these things are sometimes inevitable for us, because that's the means of purification. Unless we're a very advanced person, a very advanced devotee, then in whom material desires and attachments are no longer present, then we shouldn't be surprised by the fact that we have attachments to material things. That is quite normal and respectable. In one sense, we have to respect our material attachments, because they don't go away easily. And they'll strangle us one way or another if we don't deal with them. But we deal with them by the regulated process of devotional service. And then gradually, by following that practice, we become purified. The process of devotional service will work. And it is quite possible, it's conceivable and possible that we can be relieved or purified very rapidly or very quickly. It's quite possible. Prabhupada says, in a moment you can become a pure devotee. But on the whole, generally speaking, it takes time. It doesn't happen just like that. But it's a gradual process. For most of us, that's why we have this process called sadhana bhakti, following the rules and regulations. Then by following that process, gradually, shanai or paramet, is mentioned in the 6th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says, step by step, the yogi becomes detached. Step by step. Takes time. So Prabhupada says, better to be a sincere sweeper in the street than a charlatan meditator. Right? I think he said, this is the 6th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Better to be a sincere sweeper in the street rather than a charlatan meditator. And that requires honesty. It requires introspection and honest appraisal of where I'm at. Right? Confirmed. But the process of devotional service is so powerful. And you know, the practice, kirtan, Srimad Bhagavatam, worshipping the deities, residing in a sacred place,
the association of the devotees is so powerful that from wherever we happen to perform that, those activities, regardless of what ashram or occupation we happen to be in, we can taste that prema, or love for Krishna. We're not restricted. Because sometimes, you know, we think, oh, you have to be in the renounced order of life in order to make advancement in Krishna consciousness. Well, that's not true. That's simply a measure of the degree of renunciation that you happen to be in at that particular stage of your life. Right? But for everybody, everyone and whomever, the process of devotional service works, is applicable for all. And everybody can experience the prema, if you like, or the pleasure of devotional service. And that's what inspires us. In the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna mentions niraharasya dehina. Vishaya vinivartante. Niraharasya dehina. Rasavarajam rasopyasya param drishtvarni vartate. That because we're embodied, that means that we have to expect there will be attraction to the objects of the senses. We have to expect that. That's normal. But one's able to give up these attractions by experiencing a higher taste in devotional service. Param drishtva means a superior taste. So we're able to give up the lower taste by experiencing the higher taste, which can be experienced by anybody who engages in the process of devotional service, especially kirtan, association of the devotees, kirtan, Srimad Bhagavatam, living in a sacred place, which means, you know, basically making sure that our house or our ashram is a place of devotional service and worshipping the deity. Those five activities empower us to get a very close connection to Krishna by experiencing the prema, the impetus for love of Godhead, basically. So basically we need to find our situation and then gradually work from that point. Steady, steady, steady. You know, Prabhupada said, we don't want shooting stars. We want rising moons. Right? Moon takes longer to rise and become full. Shooting stars, pa-ching, dime a dozen. Right? But rising moons takes time. Application, dedication, long haul stuff. Long haul. So we have to be in it for the long haul. We can be a short term superstar. Well, we won't be a superstar, we'll be a fizz. A fizz. And then gradually we'll come to this point of deep love and affection for Krishna takes time. So we should understand the frailty and the weakness in attachment to material things, but we shouldn't falsely renounce them. Not recognizing their utility in Krishna consciousness and how they can actually help and support us to make advancement. And then understanding how they can help and support us, we then move from that point, working on our deep-seated and deep-rooted, very often, attachments. All right, does anybody have any comments or questions on any of these points? Prabhu.
Just had a couple of comments, just in confirmation of something you said about in the early days of ISKCON, it was quite attractive for people to take something else.
Yeah.
Because it brought so much prestige and position to some of the other things.
Yeah.
And Prabhupada lived a life that some of the young men had a young family and they wanted to run away and leave it all because it was so bothersome.
That's right.
Or troublesome, Prabhupada used that word.
Yeah.
And then they went to Prabhupada and said, I don't want it to award him or something else. Another story I heard one time was in one temple where the men thought it was a good idea to send all the ladies away to another place.
Yeah, they were going to send all the ladies to Australia.
But after some time, the book distribution started up, the scores were going down, so they thought, well, because if you look back to somewhere or other, the women can often inspire the men to.
There was nobody to perform for. Yeah. This is, this is called utsahamayi, puffed up with enthusiasm. But usually that kind of enthusiasm hasn't lasted. To maintain a high level enthusiasm over a long period of time requires a very, very deep understanding and advancement in Krishna consciousness. And that usually comes about as a result of, very, very long practice. Any engineers here? Yeah, there's a few. There's a few engineers. How do you maintain your Krishna consciousness? By looking after the family. Truly. At least it keeps his wife happy. This is a prime requisite for a spiritual advancement. I can vouch for that. Yes, it's hard, especially, we have to gauge sometimes, especially when we're say in your situation, you have not a lot of responsibilities. Right? You're young-ish. Right? So, yeah, younger. So, especially in that situation, when we come to Krishna consciousness, then living in the ashram and just doing full-time devotional service is a very attractive proposition, because it means you don't have to worry about things like, you don't have to worry about paying the rent, you don't have to worry about your meals, you get all of your clothes and everything, and everything's arranged for us, and we just do devotional service. That's a pretty good deal, right? Mind you, not everybody can do that. Not everybody can do that. But for those who have that inclination and that desire and are able to do it, then that's fine. It's recommended, it's encouraged. However, the thing is that we have to then gauge whether a person is going to be able to do that for the long term. Right? And especially for most of us, time in the ashram may be for a few years, and then we have to enter into the householder ashram. Then in the householder ashram comes a whole bunch of other responsibilities. And so therefore, the reason why we very often encourage devotees to have some educational qualification and some training before, preferably, they enter into the ashram, or sometimes they have to do it after, is so that when they go into the householder ashram, which is generally a given for almost everybody, not everybody, and naturally we want to encourage the brahmacharis and those devotees the men and women who can live in that capacity. But because you're not always sure, there's no litmus test where you can just stick, something into somebody's mouth and pull it out and say, oh yes, brahmachari. Sannyasi. Oh, good. We don't have that. And on the whole, if you did stick it into a person's mouth and come out and say, okay, householder. That's the experience. So therefore, sometimes I know I've seen devotees who've struggled with... And here's the other thing, the other single men and women, they're all doing their service and coming back to the temple and, just living a carefree life of devotional service. Although it has its responsibilities, to be quite frank. And then we've just got to go to school and do our assignments. And, that's all... stuff. Right? But sometimes the other brahmacharis, they'll say, I can't probably give it up, it's just my mundane academics. What does Prabhupada say about mundane academics? It's not connected to Krishna. It's not Krishna conscious. Yeah, give it up. Well, that's what they say. But I'll give you an example. There's one devotee, Prana Prabhu, who was a brahmachari in Melbourne. He was in a similar situation, and he was doing his teacher's training at Melbourne University. And this was at a time when we didn't have any schools, and everybody was a fired up brahmachari. And he got discouraged on more than one occasion by his situation and by the other brahmacharis as well. Because he was also a good book distributor, he's a good preacher. When he went out and did book distribution, he was a very good book distributor. So naturally the devotees would encourage him, what is all this maya? But the interesting thing is that now Prana is the headmaster of the Gurukul in Auckland. And he was also the teacher at our school at Nandagram, and very much loved by his students. He's a very good teacher, and he's built up the school in Auckland, and it is a very successful school. Even in New Zealand, it's recognised by the by his peers, the teachers in New Zealand, as being a very successful school. He went from 8 kids to 80 kids in a very short period of time, and so is. An asset to our society, and it also is also properly situated in a very responsible service that suits his nature, that suits him perfectly. So we've got to weigh up all of these things when we're dealing with a devotee. So sometimes we might encourage somebody. Well, look, you've already done so much. It's an austerity, but you have to treat that period of study, considering that it can be utilised in Krishna's service and be a great asset to yourself and to the community in the long term. We accept that service, even if it is a burden. Now that's renunciation. Right? If we can connect it with Krishna and if we can use it in Krishna's service, even if it is a pain, that's actually desirable for a devotee. If it's pleasing to Krishna, even if it causes me great inconvenience, actually that's very that's desirable for a devotee. So that's why we don't, you know, just give up these things. And, you know, when we're young devotees, sometimes it's hard to see beyond, you know, next week or next year, or we look at next week and we think, oh no, I'm going to have to travel all that way to go to university, and I've got to go to the boring lectures, and then I've got to do my assignments. I thought spiritual life was meant to make you happy. Huh? This is what, you know, I worked at the as a builder's labourer before I became a devotee, and I was very happy to join the temple in Melbourne and you know, leave my material existence. And then Balaram asked me what I did, and I said, well, you know, I used to lay bricks and stuff. He says, oh, I want you to go and lay some bricks in the temple. I thought, I didn't join Krishna consciousness to lay bricks. And I wasn't a trainer. I had worked as a brickies labourer, but and that wasn't really my propensity either. But I could do it. And that's, you know, there were windows, just like, well, you can't see them. Just like we have windows upstairs. Well, this room had windows in it when I came to the temple. My first service was to brick up all of the windows so that it would become soundproof. And the bricks are still there. and the courtyard too. I laid the courtyard outside. I laid those bricks with, what was that Greek builder? That Greek guy that used to come?
Con.
I worked with Con. So, you know, I joined Krishna consciousness, and I was thinking, yeah, I'm going to get into spiritual life, and then they got me laying bricks, which is what I was doing before. I think, what is this? This is not spiritual life. This is torture. So, you know, we have to sometimes make a judgment call, and you know, it may not be. And, you know, the senior devotees have a broader perspective usually than we have. So that's why we sometimes create these torturous situations for others. But ultimately with the view of looking at the future of that devotee and where they, you know, where they can fit in the future. So you have the choice. I mean, you can, if you want, just give it all up. Fine, you could do that. Just be a brahmacharini and live a carefree life. But that may then, limit choices later on when you need them. Now, that's why our parents keep on saying, you know, go to school, go to university, get a qualification, go to that. Right? And we think, oh, I don't know what I'm going to do that for. I've been going to school for the last, since I was born. Goes on forever. That's how I felt. You know, I just felt like a cog in the wheel. I was so glad to leave university. It's like, phew, man, these guys know how to torture a person. But anyway, we can use it in Krishna service. Because if it becomes too hard or too difficult, then maybe we have to assess things. And we can always make our choices. That's the rationale. Is that all right? No, Prabhu.
One thing is when you become the eighth plan, actually, you give up all your independence.
What? Eh?
Ashram life.
I'll just repeat that for everybody's benefit. When you join the ashram, you give up your independence. When you get married, you give up your independence, right? The people who are laughing are not married yet. But don't worry, they'll be laughing on the other side of their face soon. These young boys, a bit cheeky, I reckon. Go on, Prabhu, sorry.
Well, sometimes we get to join the ashram, we can become free.
Yeah.
But actually, to join the ashram means to be the humble and obedient servant spiritual master. Actually, there's no other program except service.
Yeah.
And that's actually a difficult situation.
Yeah. Yeah.
Your whole life is often, if you're a good servant in the ashram, it means your whole day is just planned out for you. There's no independent program.
Yeah.
So that's also a difficult situation.
We should have a bit of a chat with the brahmacharis about that.
And so this is the ideal serving the ashram.
Yeah, ideal. Yeah, good point. So therefore, your schedule is go to college. So that's interesting, isn't it? We think we do these things by choice, but... Yes?
When did Krishna come to Earth and why?
Why? Krishna came to Earth 5,000 years ago, and he came here to teach us how to come back to him. You're welcome. Anything else? Okay. Gantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.